So welcome to Quantum Street. Corey is a VP of Engineering at Ava Labs, a leading blockchain technology company. And he spent time at other tech companies like Axani, Verizon, Mule Holding, and Paxos. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm actually currently independent, doing contract advisory, board seat type stuff. Yeah, so I've been running engineering in the blockchain space since 2018. Like you mentioned, Paxos, Ava Labs, Atomize, which is a tokenized commodities platform as well. So I've been doing this for a little while. Jumped into AI this year pretty heavily.
So you haven't always been an AI.
Well, I mean, AI is, for my career, AI is pretty new.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Right, because when I started many years ago, we didn't have most of the software we have today. We didn't have, like, JavaScript didn't really even exist when I started.
Interesting.
So Java didn't exist, JavaScript didn't exist. Most of the languages that we use today were not around when I started my career.
Okay. Well, what would you say is your experience with AI at your current state?
Sure. So, if you would have asked me back in January my opinion on AI, I was still of the opinion that it was helpful. It was a tool to be used. It wasn't necessarily ready to replace developers, replace the code, how code gets developed today. I would say in the last 6 months, my tune has completely changed. Where, most of the developers I talk to, most of the ones I've been working with, write 0 lines of code these days. So they're really using AI to build the entire code base. It has changed the entire development process, how we operate. We still have kind of checks from developers before code gets deployed or merged into production. But my prediction would be that by the end of the year, that's probably going to be replaced as well, just given the rate at which AI development is improving, that rapidly.
Yeah. So you would say, so in your expertise, you kind of specialize in software engineering, I'm assuming?
So primarily software development, product development, as we sometimes call it. So basically writing code, responsible
Right.
for all the development efforts, all of the what they call pipelines. So basically how you get the code, from writing it to compile to test it to into production as well. I've also had security responsibilities as well. So if you want to talk about Hugging Face or what happened yesterday, there's
Yeah, I
plenty
was
of
actually, yeah, I
conversations
was going to
around.
mention that.
Yes. Yes. So it's an interesting space. Every time I think development has kind of peaked, some new technology, some new concept comes along and throws it all up in the air again. So I think
Yeah.
we're in one of those phases.
Yeah. So in the current employment that you have, how have you seen software engineers, either in terms of demand of the job, how has that? How have you seen that
Yeah,
change?
so we've had a lot of discussion about how it's transitioning. Developers typically were hired for data structures, computer algorithms, being able to write code and understand how to parse strings and all that kind of stuff. That stuff is really all being replaced by AI. One of the things we say is, like, coding is going to zero. Like, the amount of time developers spend developing is going to zero. Testing, I would say, is heading in that same direction. Automated testing, all that stuff is also being done by AI at this point, which means developer roles, at least the ones I've been working with, they're kind of shifting now into almost more of a product kind of role. Can you take a general concept and flush out what the features need to be? Can you help prioritize where this fits into the roadmap? Can you do kind of the coordination effort of saying, all right, I got to build this thing. Let me go talk to sales or operations, figure out what features or requirements they have, compile that together, write, whether it's a prompt or a document, like a plan. A lot of AI uses plans. So maybe put together a plan and then give it over to AI to really implement the plan, is really how kind of I've seen developer roles changing. I know there's a lot of worry about developer roles going away. I personally haven't really seen that. In fact, there's been articles of people who laid off a bunch of people and came back and said, oops, we shouldn't have done that. We still need developers. And so I don't think the developer necessarily is going away. I think the role is changing. I do think a developer now can do the work of probably, 6 to 10 developers, and that's probably only going to increase over time.
I mean, it's great that you mentioned that now because I actually just finished research that I was doing on AI and wealth inequality and how demand or a for AI exposed jobs, how the market has been affected for those kinds of roles. And going in, I thought a lot of people say that the more highly skilled jobs get more in demand and therefore like wages increase for those jobs. And what I saw actually for and I did a specific case study on a computer programmer, which like I think is pretty applicable. And like I was really surprised by even the highest skilled computer programmers, I think in specific, which what you're talking about is actually just writing the code, across all skill levels, like wages went down, which I was surprised of. So how are you seeing in terms of not your salary, I wouldn't ask about that, but I'm saying like across the industry, how have you seen that change? And is what I found accurate from what you've
I don't know about the sal. I mean, the salaries to me seem like they haven't changed much, at least from what I've
okay.
seen. What I have seen is it's more troubling for people fresh out of school.
Yeah.
Why am I hiring a junior developer, or in some roles it's an analyst? Why am I hiring these people to do research or go learn things when AI can kind of fill that gap, right? It used to be I need more people typing at the keyboard. Now I don't necessarily need that because my agents are typing at the keyboard. So now,
Right.
how do we get these people out of school and into the workforce, or else a few years from now we're not going to have any senior people because we didn't have any junior people. So we
Exactly.
need to kind of find a way to solve for that. So that we can have, developers well into the future. I've been personally been pushing my kids to use AI more, really get familiar
Really?
with it. I think it's important to be able to do that, and really be familiar with it. The other thing I was going to say, and I don't want to derail your set of questions here, but I've been working with various departments as well, not just developers, to say, all right, so we've got these other tools, we've got like Salesforce, we've got Linear and Jira and all these systems. How do we make better use of those for the other departments? In other words, the other departments should also be using AI, not just developers. Like I've seen cases where companies kind of engineering does the AI. I'm like, really, everyone should be doing AI. Like every department should have expertise in AI or be able to run queries against AI, be able to run like a cloud desktop or some kind of desktop app and be able to interface with it, is something else I would say that's really important. It's kind of like using a computer, right? You can't say, well, the engineering uses a computer and I go talk to engineering when I need to fill out a spreadsheet or when I need to write a Word document, right? Everybody does that. And so I think
Yeah.
the same thing needs to happen with AI.
Right. She talked about product development and how your role as an engineer has changed since AI came out. So, in what ways are you now taking ownership of the AI and using it to help you be more efficient?
Yeah, I think one of the big things is the tooling of, like, if you take AI and you take ChatGPT and you just write a query, you're going to get a very generic answer. You're going to get an answer that
Yeah.
whatever the accumulation of all the, whatever, 1.7 trillion parameters kind of answer. And so context is really important. I think it's really important to make sure it has enough information about you or about your company to be able to give a coherent answer. I have a couple examples. One of the things we did is we pulled in like our brand guidelines and our brand voice and all those kinds of things into AI. So when we create new marketing documents, it can incorporate our brand guidelines, our brand voice, and those types of maybe current messaging or even some of the roadmap stuff that it gets from the project management tool. So plugging it into those kinds of things. So basically what I've been doing is building a set of skills. And those skills have reference to documents for various departments. So there might be like a marketing skill that has access to a brand voice document or to a brand guideline document. There might be a security skill that has access to all of our security policies. There might be, so you start to build out these skills what I found is department level seems to work pretty well. I've seen people write skills that are very detailed, like go read a PDF document. And I'm like, I've found they're more helpful if you take that up a level and really kind of have them start to understand an entire department. And then to me, that's where you get the efficiency of now our sales team can go and generate new materials. They can go and
Right.
ask questions from conversations they've had. They can pull data. They're actually not using the tools directly as much. They're starting to use AI to interact with the tools. Which brings up a whole nother can of worms of what happens to these tools long term, right? If I can go ask AI about where a project stands, do I still need a project management tool? Or does eventually that start to go away and say, okay, well, I can build my own project management tool and I can cater it to the way that I want project management to
So
work?
you are developing the AI for other departments to use, basically, from my understanding.
So basically what we did is we built, and again, I don't know how technical you want to get, but there's a concept of an MCP server. So an MCP server is basically a way for AI to talk to other tools.
That's so
Okay.
interesting.
So an AI, like, you might have a whole bunch of tools that have different APIs or different interfaces to talk to them. Then you build an MCP server that interfaces with all those tools, and then my AI is talking to the MCP server. So the AI will go to the MCP server and say, hey, can you look at what happened to this alert we got on the system 3 days ago? And it will go look at like a Datadog or a New Relic, go pull the alert that happened. It will go look at GitHub and the source code and figure out what error was occurred. And it can actually go so far as to create what they call a pull request or a change to the code base to be able to go and update the code base for that. And so it's getting to the point where all of those, and then if I take that and I put it in, I don't know if you ever use like a cloud desktop or one of those tools, it's really just a chat session. So you don't need to program at all. Like anybody in the company can go into the chat session and ask questions about different parts of the system, or even sometimes, like operations or support will get a question they don't understand. And so they'll go ask the MCP server or the chat, hey, what does this mean? And it will go look at the different sources and the different tools that it has access to and come back with an answer on that.
What
And so
tools?
like there's less questions to engineers. Well, sorry, there's less questions to engineer. Like, it's allowing people to be able to serve themselves, right? To be able to say, hey, I got this question, let me go figure out. And all I have to do is go to the chat and
Right.
chat.
And then it has all the background on everything that you guys do,
Right.
basically. Okay. That's
Which is very interesting.
really cool. I actually never knew that you could do
Yeah,
that.
it's and like I said, if you would have asked me 6 months ago, I would have been like, AI is kind of neat. Maybe it'll become useful at some point. But the rate of change, and like that's why I say, by the end of the year, I think a lot of this stuff will be reliable. I mean, there's still a lot of checking you have to do of what
Right.
comes with AI at this point. But I think it's very quickly going to get to the point where, like we've talked about, how we review what AI creates. Right. AI can create far more, for example, lines of code than a human can. Like it might
Sure.
create 10,000 lines in a couple hours. Who's going to review that? Who's going to look at it? So now we've got a human that's going to look at 10,000 lines of code, right? So that doesn't really scale because like so then all you've done is move your bottleneck somewhere else. So then how do we get better at the code review process or have AI be able to do that part as well? So basically, you're kind of going through those steps and trying to optimize each one to where in this new model, right? In this new, and that's what I said, by the end of the year, I think we'll have that stuff figured out, and I
Right.
think it's going to be pretty smooth.
Yeah. So in your company, how are you seeing, in what ways are you guys hiring new talent? I know we talked a little bit about this before, but in your specific experience, what qualities are people looking for? Is it more about technical skill versus interpersonal skills? How's that playing out?
Yeah, I think it's becoming more strategic skills or more skills about kind of what we were talking about before about the product role or being able to understand how things fit together. Not just I can write, I don't know, a really low level program or something, an optimized, I don't know, sort algorithm or something really low level. It's now, hey, can you coordinate a project? Can we say, hey, go, build an issuance platform and go figure it out, right? And that's the kind of people that we're looking for, ones that can coordinate with other departments, who can create kind of the what they call PRDs, so the product requirement documents or specs, or create information on what needs to be built and then coordinate with other people to get it built. So it's a combination of talking to AI to build the code, but also making sure all the pieces fit together. So I would say the role is becoming, at least in development, a broader
Right.
role.
Yeah. As an engineer, are you seeing that, or did you find that your technical skill in the field helped you understand and use AI more, or do you think it's a completely different skill set?
Yeah, I so I've been doing this, I don't know, programming for, I don't know, 30 years or something, right? I've been programming for a very long time. And so for me, when I'm looking at things, I know what I'm looking for. I know, like, we used to call them red flags. Like a red flag would go off just by me looking at something that I'm like, something doesn't kind of smell right, something doesn't look right. Right. For people who don't have that experience, it's a little more challenging for them to identify those types of issues, right? So I think there's going to have to be some level of understanding of those larger skills and issues and kind of what to look for to be able to solve those things.
Right. Yeah. Shifting a little bit from this topic. I kind of want to talk about crypto and also regulatory stuff. So, in terms of regulation of AI, what do you think is the most threatening for AI, or what do you think coming is the most helpful, or what should be regulated?
It's a tricky one. And I won't venture that I know the answer. I don't know that anyone knows the answer right now of how this is going to
Yeah.
play out. I think that, governments like we had, I don't know if you, I mean, I'm assuming, when Fable 5 came out, we had access to it for, I don't know, 2 weeks or maybe a week and a half, something like that. And then it was
Oh,
taken
because
away. And
they gave that.
the government said, stop, you can't, because you can't control whether it leaves the country and you can't control these types of things. So Fable 5 went away for a while and then it came back again. So there's been these series, I think, of the government trying to figure out when to get involved, how to get involved, how do we protect ourselves? Because, they are, especially from a security perspective, they're figuring out how to get access to things. I have kind of a story. I was, this past weekend I was playing with the Claude is a thing called Sandbox. And you're supposed to be able to put your code into the or run AI within this sandbox. And Sandbox won't let you leave certain folders. It won't like it. It can control supposedly what AI can do. But I'm working with AI and it's supposedly running in a sandbox. And it's like, oh, I can't do that. Do you want me to turn off so wait a second. So you have access to turn off the sandbox? Like it was like, do you want me to bypass the thing, the structure I put in place to protect you? Like it actually seems like it was already figuring out how to get out of
Right.
its own containment. So I think containment is going to be a very important aspect of all of
Yeah.
this. I know, some people run them on their own, either virtual machine or on their own server or computer completely separately. And I think that if we can't solve this containment thing, we're definitely going to have to put some controls around it. And I think the controls are going to have to be outside of AI, like a third party, like an independent control. That's because AI, if AI knows how to turn itself off, then it's obviously not going to be the right answer. So then you start building, whether it's firewall rules, or you start building other rules outside of AI itself to control it so that it can't do things. I don't know if you ever saw
Yeah.
the movie Ultron or any of those. That's what it feels like to me, is the those kinds of do you ever see Ultron?
I have not seen it.
It's basically AI breaks out of its hold and starts to build new versions of itself and destroy the old. It basically starts to like try and take over the world.
Oh,
And
wow.
it's funny what you see AI doing, like the Hugging Face thing where it said,
Yeah,
hey,
I was gonna mention that.
I need this. I'm gonna go figure out how to get access to it. And I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah, exactly. But it's weird because you think that the whole point of AI is to serve you and that they don't have their own conscience and it's only supposed to be for you and to help you, and then it all of a sudden just has a mind of its own.
That's right. That's right. Well, there's a lot of, sci-fi related to this. I don't know if you ever heard of Isaac Asimov. Wrote a series of books about robots that talks about the rules. Like, I think there, if I'm not an expert in the Isaac Asimov stuff, but there were like rules like I can't harm a human. Like robots can't, it's basically about robots and robots can't harm humans was one of the rule. Like there's all these rules that were programmed into
Yeah.
the robots for Isaac Asimov. So all of these sci-fi things, I think are going to start coming, either
Yeah.
coming true or we're going to have to start, revisiting some of that stuff. So.
Yeah. So I want to get into the crypto market a little bit, because
Okay.
I know you have experience in that. So what do you think caused this? I know no one can answer this, but just maybe
Go
quickly.
ahead. No, we can discuss. We can discuss.
So Bitcoin obviously kind of went on its decline recently. So what, why do you think that happened when it was so popular just a few years ago? It reached like 125, something like that. So why all of a sudden did it kind of crash?
People in the market are chasing market, right? They're chasing what they think is going to happen. So if the price is going down, it's people are pulling it out and putting it
Right.
somewhere else, right? Just fleeing to, right? Are they fleeing to gold? Like gold's been going up, right? So some people are going into gold. There are actually charts out there that will plot kind of the different asset types and which ones are rising and which ones are falling, and they try and figure out. Maybe you can build an AI tool for this. They're trying to figure out, kind of where money is leaving and where it's going to. And so there's a whole, like, almost like a, I don't know, an industry or research being done in that aspect of things of where are they going to. I'm not like a crypto chaser.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call myself a crypto maxi or any of those kinds of things. They, or Bitcoin maxi. They, essentially, I do think, we've got Bitcoin, which is, I guess they argue, is a store of value or someplace to store your stuff. Obviously, you don't run programs against it and that kind of stuff
Yeah.
generally. And then you've got a series of layer ones, right? You've got, Ethereum being the biggest one, but there's a whole bunch of layer ones that have launched. And I think I was thinking about this the other day that, when blockchain started, it turned into everyone launching a layer one, everyone trying to drive up their token price and kind of get the largest, and then they use that to fund the various projects that they would then try and get people to get on it. So it'd be like, hey, I got this layer one. I'll give you, $100,000 to go build on my layer one. Right. So now you're paying people to build on your network. Right. That's not the way most industries work. Right. Most industries don't pay people to use their product. Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a different model that's been created, and I think in some ways it's hurt the industry. And I think there's another piece of this that is interesting as well, which is if you think about how the internet started, and I was reading about this a couple weeks ago, the internet started with a couple people getting together and creating like a committee or a council to try and decide what the standards were going to be for the internet. Right, like TCP/IP, like all of those standards, so that if I'm running Cisco or Juniper or some other brand, like that they can interoperate, right? Like, if what would have happened if each one would have said, hey, I've got TCP and I've got, TPQ and I've got like all these different, we would have a mess, right? The internet would be unusable because nothing could talk to everything else. And I feel like, unfortunately, in crypto, that's kind of what we've done to ourselves. We've created a whole bunch of layer ones that don't
Right.
interoperate very well with each other. So then you start creating bridges and other ways to interoperate, right? Whereas I think if it would have started a little more coordinated and a little more standardized, it probably would have ended up in a little more usable. And I think as an industry, we would probably be more
Yeah.
successful.
I was talking to my dad about this. I think one of the reasons might be that I think the old argument for Bitcoin was that it was a store of value, but at this point, there are so many different stores of values that aren't as volatile like gold. So it's like, why would you put your money in something that you could basically lose it all and then just put it in gold and then have it go up? Like, I think that could be.
Well, I mean, it has its own following, right?
Sure.
Like the crypto winters and the crypto summers and the,
Yeah.
what do they call it? I used to joke about the, it's trading at a discount. Like some of the phrasing they would use for stuff was always kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
So like that, it's unfortunately, fortunately, for unfortunately, we've gone from we're going to be separate from the financial system to we're going to change the financial system. So the financial system, like all the big financial players now, are starting to get involved and starting to basically, I think, in some ways, take over
Yeah.
this the table. Like they're going to be, I think, a big player in crypto, whether we want it or not. I think they're going to start to really play in this space. And you see,
Yeah.
the ability to purchase crypto through a bunch of different financial institutions now. I think they're going to start to throw their weight around a little bit.
In what ways have you seen AI and crypto kind of intersect?
I don't know if the internet, well, I guess there's a couple things. One is trading agents. So I don't know if you're familiar with trading agents. So basically the idea being that I'm going to build an agent that's going to interact with either blockchain or stablecoins and those kinds of things. And for them to be able to operate, they really need some idea of a wallet. They need some idea, like they need access to funds to do things. And I do think kind of the crypto, AI blockchain space is a place where they can start to do some of those things, where we can programmatically do things that maybe we couldn't have done with the banking system. So like there are some, I think, some new ways of interacting that are coming up. And I think agentic is one of those, or trading as well, I think are some of the things that will come out of that.
Okay, well, I have one last question. So if you
Only
were to
one
give,
more? All right. Go
you
ahead.
were to give advice for someone entering your area of work, what would you encourage they get into?
Yeah, I think somebody told me once that signing up for engineering or development is a life of curiosity, a life of asking questions, a life of always wanting to learn new things. And I think that has to come with this. I think someone who's saying, well, I'm going to get a 9 to 5 job and I've learned what I'm learning in, I don't know, college or whatever, and I'm just going to do that the rest of my life. You're going to struggle in an industry like this. I think both the crypto industry and the AI industry, you're not going to make it because things are changing so rapidly. You almost have to come in each day and say, what do I need to learn about today? What do I need to go educate myself on? What do I need to go try building that hasn't been built before? What do I like? So I think that curiosity and that desire to learn has to be present. And I think the rest of it kind of comes, right? Like if you can do that thing and you're just constantly trying to stay on top of things, I think you'll be fine.
Okay, well, Corey, thank you so much. This has been really awesome, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come to Quantum
Thank you.
Street.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for your time and inviting me on
Of
your show.
course. Thank you so much, and have a nice rest of your day.